Hello everybody, how's it going? Like the song says, welcome back to the Justin Rogers Sports Podcast. It's been a while. It's been, what's it been, like 2 weeks since I recorded a podcast? No, it's got to be longer than that. It's got to be more like 3 weeks, close to a month now. And I want to start this off by apologizing first for the cheesy song at the beginning. I don't know why, just like when I was thinking of recording a podcast, I was like, I need to put something in the beginning, because you hear podcasts all the time having like opening theme music. Same goes for radio shows, all that. They always have music coming back from breaks and everything. And me, no, I just go straight to talking. So I was like, I'm gonna have a little fun with it. I'm gonna bring back a song that I used to like back in the day. That was, of course, Welcome Back by Mace. Never really knew what happened to his music since that song. That was pretty much the only song I knew by him. But anyways, I'm sorry that I haven't been podcasting at all lately. I've just been super busy with my internship, which sadly has come to an end. For those of you who don't know, I was a radio programming intern for the Ted Ramey show on KNBR 1050. And for those of you who don't know what that is, basically what I would do is I'd commute to the city twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I would edit audio, I would create highlights, I would find articles and gather stats, whatever Ted needed, and I would contribute to his show. I would upload interviews to his podcast. Basically, on every show, we would have three interviews: one at the 12:30 hour, one at the 1:30 hour, and then one at the 2:30 hour. And what I would do is, after those shows are over, I would take the audio from the show and cut everything else out except for the interview, and I would upload each separate interview onto his podcast. I would also screen calls for anyone who would call in, and then every now and then I would actually run the board for the show, which was kind of intimidating, but it was a lot of fun nonetheless. And I'm sad that internship came to an end, because I learned a lot of good quality skills in the radio broadcasting industry that I will try my best to implement into my radio show this upcoming fall semester, and even in my podcast, because, I mean, I can use all the help I can get, and there's always room for improvement. As my internship came to a close, I was actually very lucky enough, very fortunate enough to get a press pass to a Giants game, my first ever press pass. When I did promotions in Cumulus, I got standing room tickets to a Warriors game one time, which was really cool. But this was my first ever press pass. It was kind of their gift to me, thanking me for what I did for them and their internship, which they didn't have to do, but I thought was really nice, and I'm very thankful for that, because for those of you who know me, I am a huge baseball fan. The Giants are my favorite sports team. Baseball is my favorite sport, the one I'm most passionate about. So to be able to do that was like a dream come true to me. The hardest part was we weren't allowed to cheer for any team. We weren't allowed to cheer or clap or anything, because we had to act professional because we were part of the media. And going to so many Giants games a year, it just comes natural to cheer when they do something good. I mean, that's my favorite team. Everyone cheers for the team that they like. So I caught myself a couple times when they were doing something good. I was about to clap and I had to stop myself. But it was an incredible experience nonetheless. It started with, we got to the park around 4:30, and we got there in time to watch BP first. We went and we scoped out the press box area where we'd be watching the game, making sure we had seats available for us. And we did, obviously. And so after that, we went to the field to watch batting practice. And when I got down there, we were walking through the dugout, and you could see all the players coming up, and I saw Hunter Pence, Brandon Belt, and I was just like in awe because I grow up, I idolize these guys as baseball players. I mean, I look up to them tremendously, and as a Giants fan, it's like, oh my God, like these players you root for day in and day out, they're literally right here. I'm right next to them, and I couldn't say hi or do anything except just walk by and go about my business. And so we went and we got to the dugout, and the media was interviewing Bruce Bochy, and I was actually able to get sound of what he was saying on my phone, and I wanted to put it in this podcast, but I actually, it's too quiet, but I do have sound from later in the post game that I'm going to try and put in here. I'm kind of doing this on the fly, so we'll see if I'm actually able to do this. And so anyways, from after hearing Bochy speak, I actually went up from the dugout onto the field, and the pitchers were taking batting practice. And it's crazy watching batting practice from on the field, just from the same viewpoint as the players. Madison Bumgarner and the rest of the starting pitching staff for the Giants were taking BP at the time, and Bumgarner, is just watching him take batting practice is unbelievable. It's crazy. You have to watch it for yourself, because if you were just at the park and you were far away and you couldn't tell who was hitting, you would think he was an actual power hitter at the plate. He was hitting home run after home run, and he almost hit that little league field for toddlers or whatever in left field. He almost hit that on multiple occasions, and I remember I saw him hit one at one point, and I was just watching it go. And there's this guy walking by the along the pathway behind the bleachers in left field, right by that toddler field, and the ball almost hit him. It was crazy. Like, it caught him off guard, and I was just like, what is this? This is crazy. Jeff Samardzija had a couple good ones too, but Madison Bumgarner was like in a league of his own in this batting practice session. So that was cool. I'm glad I was able to see that, because lately when I've gone to Giants games, I don't get there early enough to watch them take BP. So it was nice to see that. And so after watching BP for a bit, we went up to the press box, and by we, I mean James, the guy in charge of my internship, the one who supervises me, he took me to the game. So when I refer to we, I'm referring to me, myself, and James. Anyways, after we went up to the press box, and then we went, they had like this dining room, like cafeteria section for the media to eat, and got a lot of food for really cheap. It's basically all you can eat food. So of course I pigged out. I got a burger, I got chicken, I got salad, I got corn on the cob, I got cookies, everything I could. And that's pretty cool, because there's all these different media members eating in there. There's like Alexander Pavlovich from CSN, there was Kruk and Kaib, and it's just like, just seeing all these guys that you see and hear on TV, again, that in itself was kind of surreal. And so after we ate, we went and we watched the game, and it was a good game. I mean, especially with the way the Giants have been playing, that was a good game. They were playing against the Pirates, and Samardzija was pitching that night. The Giants ended up losing that game 4-3, if I recall. Recall correctly, and it was frustrating just because of how their second half has been going and how they had multiple opportunities within that game to win, including in the bottom of the ninth they had runners on first and third with no outs, and Ire Adrianza hit, I'm trying to remember if they had one out, and then I believe they had They either had no outs or one out, and anyways, they were about to intentionally walk him to get the bases loaded, and he popped out to second base, and then whoever came up after him hit into a double play to end the game. I'm sorry I don't have the stats right in front of me. Otherwise, I would say who it was, but in all honesty, it's kind of a blur to me right now, and it's kind of a blur because after the game, we went down into the clubhouse. We had access to the Giants clubhouse in order to get more sound. So when we got down there, I was able to get sound from Jeff Samardzija, Joe Panic, and Buster Posey. Unfortunately, Posey's is kind of too quiet. You can't really hear what he's saying, but I'm going to show you right now what I got out of Joe Panic. I wasn't interviewing him. I was just there listening, and basically he was just talking about how frustrating it is on them and how they're down about the way they've been playing and they know they're better. So here's Joe Panic, and you can hear the frustration in his voice here. I'm going to play that for you real quick.
Inside us, but we do realize that we still have 9 games against the Dodgers. It is a long season, and things could turn or hurt. You know, maybe it takes getting a big knock here or there, or something to kind of get a spark. So, because we still got 9 games against them, and obviously we know it's a long season. But at the same time, I mean, nobody's happy. We know we're not playing the way we should. But you have to play baseball. You got to stay within ourselves, not try to get outside of what we do best.
So that was Joe Panic. Obviously, you can hear the frustration in his voice, and I thought that was pretty cool that I was able to hear that firsthand. Just seeing the vibes in the locker room, you can tell. It's just, things aren't going the Giants' way. And, I mean, it seems like after the Pirates series, things have kind of gotten more on track with how they've been playing against the Mets. Let's see. In game one, they beat them 10-7. And then in game two, they beat them 8-1. In the first game, Bumgarner pitched 5 innings, gave up 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks, struck out 6 batters. He also hit a 2-run home run himself, and that honestly was not the pitching duel that probably everyone was thinking. Everyone was expecting DeGrom and Bumgarner to just pitch a 2-1 game, something like that, but no, ended up being 10-7, and in game number two, Johnny Cueto got the nod for the Giants, and he went 7 innings, gave up 8 hits, 1 earned run, and he's 14-3 on the year with a 2.90 ERA. Bumgarner 12-7 on the year with a 2.25 ERA. So, without a doubt, those are the Giants' 2 aces. We knew that going in, and Johnny Cueto has panned out for them. It was kind of, he didn't pitch well last season with the Royals, even though he got the World Series ring. He did not pitch that great at all, and he's had a bounce-back year. He shoved when he was with the Reds in the National League Central for his career prior to being traded. And I don't know, maybe it's one of those things where you're just more comfortable in the National League than the American League. It happens. Some players, they go from one league to the other, and they struggle. Some go from one league to the other, and they absolutely shine. It's just the way it goes. Anyways, just when the Giants seem to be getting out of their slump, they lost today 9-5 with Matt Moore on the hill, the newly acquired pitcher from the Rays. He went 5 innings, gave up 5 hits, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, and then Jake Peavy came into the game in a 1-run ball game, I believe, the score was 3-2, and then after he came in, PV pitched 2 innings, gave up 5 hits and 5 earned runs, including, I want to say, he gave up 2 home runs, one to Yoenis Cespedes and one to former Giant Alejandro Deaza, and more. He also gave up a home run to Cespedes earlier in the game, but PV, oh man, he gave up a 2-run bomb to Cespedes and then the 3-run home run to Deaza, who's not even hitting 200 on the year. And why Jake Peavy was in a 1-run ball game when he has a 5-plus ERA, that's anyone's best guess. I have no idea. I don't know what Bochy was doing there. I didn't like the move from the beginning. I wish he would have used another bullpen arm, but for whatever reason, he went with Peavy to eat some innings, and it backfired tremendously. And it's one of those things with the Giants that irritates the hell out of me. The Giants, although I love how loyal they are to their players who help contribute in many ways, sometimes they're a little too loyal. That's the case with Matt Cain. There's no reason why he should be starting right now. I'm sorry. I loved Cain. He's always been a great Giant, but my God, sometimes you just gotta say enough is enough. I mean, seriously, you can't find anyone in your minors who can pitch better than a 5.8-something ERA. I mean, I know you owe him a lot of money, and I know you're loyal to your players that have had such an impact, but, I mean, you gotta say at some point that you gotta break this cycle, because, in my opinion, at the end of the day, what's most important is if you win championships. And with Matt Cain and Jake Peavy going out there starting games, it's going to hinder your chances a little bit, especially with the way they've been pitching lately. Who knows what will happen in September? Probably in September call-ups, they won't be pitching these players at all. I know they put Matt Cain on the DL with, I don't know, I think it was like back soreness, something like that. Because they could afford to skip their 5th starter in the upcoming games because they have a day off. But anyways, that's just my frustration on them. Some good parts to the Giants. Angel Pagan, although he left the game early with groin soreness, he extended his hitting streak to 18 games with a bunt single in the first inning. Denard Span, he's finally heating up and seeming comfortable as a Giant. His batting average has gone up to .273. In his last 7 games, he's 11 for 30. And then in the series against the Mets, he's 9 for 14. So he's obviously heating up. He got a splash hit home run today. That's good to see because, I mean, he's up until recently, he has not been the player the Giants hoped they were getting, but I mean, he's heating up now, and it's at the right time. They could use all the offense they can get. Another couple players on their offense that are hitting well are Panic. He's finally hitting up. He had a triple today, and then Posey. The thing with Posey, he's hitting well. It's just he doesn't seem comfortable up there. Every time you see him hit, he's like grimacing, like he's in pain. And when I was in the locker room the other night, they were asking him about his back because there's been rumors that he has a sore back, and he was saying that it doesn't hurt when he hits, it only hurts when he runs, like it bothers him to run, and you can tell. But it almost makes me wonder if it hurts him when he hits as well, because his numbers are down this year, which I know if you're just a casual baseball fan and you're looking at his stats and you're going, huh, like, he's hitting .295 with 12 bombs and 50-something RBIs, that seems like a pretty good year, especially out of a catcher. But as Giants fans are used to Posey hitting .300 at least with about 20 bombs and 80 to 100 RBIs. And I know there's still a month left. There's still plenty of time for him to increase those numbers, but just right now, he has no power to his hits. But luckily, he's hitting for average. He's getting hits when he needs to. Brandon Crawford, he's hitting really well on the year. He's proving that last year was not just a fluke year, one of those really good years. So he's repeated his offensive numbers. His home runs are a little bit down this year. I think he has 10 or 11. But he has the most RBIs on the team, if I'm not mistaken. Brandon Belt, he's also had a really good year. He has a high on-base percentage. It's like, I want to say it's 400 or damn near close to 400. So their offense, I don't know. It seems like they're doing well in some games, and then at some points it just frustrates the hell out of me because it seems like every time they have runners in scoring position, they hit into a rally-killing double play. I've tweeted about this a couple times, and especially when I was at the game, they had a rally-killing double play. Today, they had two different ones. They had runners on first and third with one out, and Joe Panic up, and he hit into inning-ending double play. And then later in the game, too, they hit into another inning-ending double play, and it's just like, God, you gotta stop hitting into these double plays. I mean, another game against the Pirates when they're losing 6-4, they had the bases loaded with no outs, and then Posey comes up and he hits into a double play. They score one run, make it 6-5, and they end up losing 6-5 because Crawford lined out to center to end the game. It's just so frustrating because they should have won that game right there. And honestly, it's been so frustrating that I was more surprised to see them score one run out of it. That's how bad it's been at times with the Giants offense. And then you have games like today where they score five runs, but the pitching is just absolutely terrible. The bullpen, terrible. It's like when one thing is going right, the other goes wrong. When they're hitting, their pitching sucks. When their pitching is good, their offense sucks. It's just, they have not put together a ton of complete games since the second half. Hardly any. Will that change? Who knows? It's not looking too bright until the first two games of the series against the Mets. But you never know. Baseball is a weird sport. It's a long, long season. So it's anyone's best guess. Luckily, at this point in time, they are a half a game ahead of the Dodgers, who, last I checked, were losing to the Reds 7-0, and Brandon Finnegan was throwing a no-hitter, and then I believe Adrian Gonzalez broke that up. I'm not sure where it is right now. I don't have it open. But if that remains the same, the Giants will remain a half a game in first. That's pretty much all I have about the Giants. Right now, I'm going to switch gears to the 49ers, who are actually in action against the Broncos as we speak. As I say this, Christian Ponder just rushed for a touchdown in that game. So they just signed him, and it's making an impact right away. And they're playing the Broncos pretty solid tonight. I say that despite all the fumbles that they have. I don't have the stats open right now. All I got to say is that both teams are playing kind of sloppy on the offensive end with trying to protect the football. Anyways, I want to talk a little bit about the first game against the Texans last week. Was not impressed with Blaine Gabbert at all. He went 4 for 10, 63 yards, including a 43-yard touchdown to Vance McDonald, who I really hope has a good year this year. I mean, he's got the size, he's got speed. He needs to put it all together. He needs to get some hands, hold on to the football, because he should be a mismatch for the defense. He should be able to make some plays, and it just hasn't quite worked out so far. So hopefully this season will have a new ring to it, be a little different in terms of his progress. But yeah, Blaine Gabbert, I wasn't impressed. Even though he had that one nice throw, that's about the only good play that he had. He opened up the game where he had two wide open receivers for they were short gains, but he just missed them terribly, and he was doing that throughout his performance. He didn't play that long, but he started out terrible. 40% completion percentage, that's not what you want if you're in the middle of a QB battle. And speaking of, I'll get into that QB battle a little later between him and Colin Kaepernick, which is such a bizarre competition. Gabbert hasn't been playing the greatest, and then Kaepernick, he hasn't even been playing, so it's just bizarre. But I'll talk a little bit more about that later. I felt bad in the game for Thad Lewis, who was a backup for Chip Kelly when he coached for the Eagles. He looked decent. He went 12 for 21 throwing, 97 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Came out after he injured his knee, and he walked to the locker room, so it just seemed like he tweaked it, but they did an MRI or whatever they do for injuries, and it turns out he tore his ACL, so he's going to be out for the year. Disappointing for him after a promising first game. Another player who I liked was Mike Davis and Sean Drone. I thought they played well throughout the game. After watching this Niners game, Mike Davis has had a rough game, but the Niners, at least at this moment, they're still winning. They're beating the Broncos 24-17. I liked his performance in week one. He seemed different. He seemed faster. He seemed more in shape this football season. Sean Drone, he was signed out of desperation for the Niners last year. He ended up having a decent year, and he had a couple nice runs in that game. What I was most impressed with, though, was the defense. I thought the defense played really well, especially in the first half. And one player in particular who I haven't really heard much of since he was in college was cornerback Chris Davis. For those of you who aren't familiar with the name, he was the return man for Auburn in that crazy ending against Alabama where Alabama missed a field goal, and they were set up in punt formation, and he was in the end zone, and he returned the missed field goal like 108 yards or something like that for the game-winning touchdown. It was an absolutely crazy play, and if you haven't seen that, I recommend you look that up on YouTube. I'm sure if you type in Chris Davis touchdown, it'll be the first thing that pops up. That was an absolutely crazy play. And anyways, he's with the Niners looking for a roster spot, and he had an impressive game from the corner position. He had three third down stops, and when I was looking up some more stats to see what the media was saying about him, I found an article saying how he's also impressed in joint practices with the Broncos over the week. So with the way he's been playing, he'll probably make the squad. Will he be a starter? I don't know, but he's having an impressive camp nonetheless, impressive preseason, and so is Jimmy Ward, former first-round pick for the Niners. So hopefully he can put it all together this year. I liked what he did last year. He seems to be doing really well out of the corner position now. And another area that I was impressed with was the 49ers offensive line. Anthony Davis, who was finally reinstated, he switched to right guard just in order to help out the line in any way that he could, and it was his best route to becoming a starter for when the season begins. Before that, he was a right tackle, so we'll see how the position change goes for him, because the Niners, they need all the help they can get on the offensive line. That was a huge weakness for them last year. It was incredible how bad their offensive line was. But it seems like so far this year they've made some steps to improve that offensive line. Joe Staley's looking, well, he will be the starting left tackle. Zane Beatles, who they got from the Jaguars, or Josh Garnett, the rookie they drafted out of Stanford. are competing for the starting job at the left guard position. Daniel Kilgore, he has the center position on lock. And right now it's looking like Trent Brown will be the right tackle. And we'll see how it goes for that right guard position. Probably, it will probably end up being Anthony Davis at some point. But I'm unsure. Anything can happen in the preseason. But regardless, they strengthened the offensive line some. Hopefully, it'll continue to be a strength this season because they're going to need all the help they can get this upcoming season. I mean, offensive line is crucial to a successful team, especially since the Niners, they want to be a run-first team, and because they weren't able to establish a run game that effectively last year. Carlos Hyde, he got hurt. Hopefully he'll be healthy because along with a good O-line and a healthy running back, that's a start. I don't anticipate the Niners will be any good this year. I think they're going to be miserable. I think they're going to suck. I hate saying that because I'm a Niners fan, but it's not looking too bright this year, especially with the quarterback competition they have. And I mentioned earlier a little bit about it. Well, as I say, they're not going to be impressive. Christian Ponder just threw a touchdown shortly after scoring a running touchdown, and the Niners are leading 31-17 right now. So they're having a really good game. Anyways, with the quarterback competition between Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick, I don't like either of them at all. Cap, he's not playing tonight versus the Broncos. How are you going to win a competition if you're not playing? And I don't even know if I buy that whole arm fatigue thing, because the other day at my internship, there were people talking about how they were at the 49ers practices and Colin Kaepernick's on the sidelines just throwing bullets like nothing's wrong at all. So I don't know, maybe they're holding him out because they don't want to risk him getting injured and then him owing him money. Maybe they're holding him out because they're thinking, oh, well, maybe a quarterback will get injured and they'll want to trade for Kaepernick. And so they're hoping he's healthy so they can trade him, get rid of that contract, and just put an end to the Colin Kaepernick era once and for all. I don't know. All I know is he's not playing. He hasn't looked good in practices when his arm has not been fatigued. They said I've read articles where it said that he looks the exact same. He's misfiring, underthrowing guys that are 5 yards out, just like last year, overthrowing guys. And he's just not accurate. And you're not going to be a successful quarterback in the league if you're not accurate. And I hear people saying that, well, Colin Kaepernick, he's been successful before. He gives the Niners the best chance to win. Blaine Gabbert, he hasn't done anything. He's 8-27 as a starter. That may be true, and I'm not advocating or speaking on behalf of Blaine Gabbert. Anyways, I don't think he's anything special at all, but I think with the way things are going, he'll be the starter week one. Will he give the Niners a good chance to win? Probably not. I don't think either quarterback will. Gabbert, he hasn't looked good at all, really. I didn't watch the start of the game tonight versus the Broncos, but based on his first performance and what they're saying in practice, he hasn't looked anything too special. Kaepernick, although he has that electrifying playing ability, he hasn't been able to put it together. He's regressed tremendously in the past couple years. I don't know if it's worth throwing him out there because he has the potential. He hasn't put it together. I don't think he'll do anything great this year. Gabbert, he's nothing special. He's not an electrifying player by any means. He's, at best, a game manager. I don't know. I would say he's the poor man's Alex Smith. Who knows? We'll see. Maybe Gabbert will have a good year this year. Maybe he'll get hurt and Kaepernick will play and he'll have a good year. Maybe Gabbert will suck. They'll put Kaepernick in. He'll suck. And then Christian Ponder, who's having a tremendous game right now. Maybe he'll become the starter. Who knows? I don't know. The Niners QB situation just is not good. They need to address it in the draft next year. Maybe they'll tank for Deshaun Watson from Clemson. I wouldn't be opposed to that. He's an electrifying player who looks like he would be a good NFL caliber player. Anyways, I'm approaching the end of my podcast. I'm at about 35 minutes now. I want to make this about 40 minutes or so. So I'm going to switch gears one more time. Lastly, I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics, because that's an event that comes once every 4 years. So who knows when I'll have the chance to record a podcast again. The Olympics will probably be over by then, with school starting next week. And just between that, I don't know if I'll have the time to podcast as frequently. So I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics, first and foremost, by mentioning how incredible Michael Phelps is. That guy is unreal. 23 gold medals throughout his career. It's his, what, his fourth Olympics. And I remember going in, I was kind of nervous to see how he would do this year, because he's 31 years old and he's contemplated retirement. It seems like he's like the Brett Favre of swimming in terms of retiring. Anyways, I was unsure of how he would do. I really wanted him to do well in these Olympics, because swimming is one of my favorite Olympic events to watch. And just growing up watching the greatest swimmer of all time, it's crazy just to be able to say, like, I got to watch Michael Phelps over the years and just watch him win gold after gold after gold. It's incredible. So yeah, I was nervous just because I didn't want him to go out there and not swim good, not win, because it's fun watching Michael Phelps win. It's crazy. And he didn't disappoint at all. He won 5 golds, 1 silver. He won a gold in the 4x200 freestyle, 200 meter butterfly, 4x100 medley, 4x100 freestyle, and the 200 meter individual medley. And then he won his silver in the 100 meter butterfly. So he just put together incredible races. I watched as many as I could. I didn't like, though, how it was shown here in the West Coast later than the East Coast, because I'd log on to Twitter just to see what's going on Twitter, and I'd accidentally come across a tweet saying Michael Phelps won gold. So I was like, oh man, well, now when I watch it, I know what'll happen, so I won't be as surprised, I won't get as pumped. But I still watched nonetheless, because I want to watch greatness. I mean, who doesn't? Who knows when we'll have another athlete like Michael Phelps? We may never have one again. 29 medals total, 23 gold. It's incredible. Another swimming story that I thought was interesting was Lochte Gate, as they're calling it. First of all, I thought Ryan Lochte was incredibly unimpressive in these Olympics. He won 1 gold, and that was in the 4x200 medley, and I don't even think he medaled in anything else. He might have got a silver in something or a bronze, but he didn't really do anything. Certainly didn't win a gold in any individual races. And that Lochte Gate thing is just bizarre. I've never really liked Ryan Lochte. I don't know. I've always thought he was a jerk, and then this just proves it even more. This is just so bizarre. He's been apologizing the last couple days, and then today he releases another thing saying he over-exaggerated in telling his story. Yeah, you think? He said they got robbed, held at gunpoint, and they took his wallet and blah, 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 blah. But then video surveillance showed him showing up back to Olympic Village, and he still had all his jewelry on and everything, and he didn't report it to the police or nothing. And that raised some eyebrows right there. And why wouldn't it? Why would someone rob you, take your wallet, but not take your watch or your jewelry or whatever? You think they want to rob you, they'd take everything. I don't know. I'm not a I'm not a thief. I've never robbed anyone, so I wouldn't know. I'm just going off what I would think. So yeah, he blamed the whole thing on the language barrier. He says he over-exaggerated. He said when there's a language barrier and someone's pointing a gun at you, of course it's traumatic and blah 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 blah, and they were asking for money, something like that. And well, they were asking for money because you tore down this like metal framed poster and you vandalized their restroom or whatever. You broke a mirror. Yeah, of course they're gonna ask for money. You're not being robbed. You vandalized their property. They're asking for money to repair what you broke. How do you not understand that? He says it's traumatic being out at night in a foreign country. No. I'm pretty sure you can go out in a foreign country and be totally fine if you just act civilized. I've never been out of the country, so I wouldn't know for sure, but I would assume that's the case. I know plenty of people have gone out of country and they've been totally fine. So I think you can do the same, Ryan Lochte. No other Olympian has had problems like that. Luckily, though, all the people who he was with, luckily they're all free now, because Lochte, he fleed back to the United States. His flight left before he could be detained or anything, and then his teammates that were with him, they got pulled off their flights to be investigated. But luckily they're good now. Bence and Conger, they blame Lochte for the whole thing, and they're fine. They're back in the country. And then Fagan was released from custody, and he just donated $10,800 to a Rio charity for education or something along those lines. But he's back in the country now. Everyone's back in the country. They're blaming Ryan Lochte, as they rightfully should, and everything is right. Anyways, other swimming stories that made me happy that I enjoyed watching was Maya Dorado, Santa Rosa's own local Olympian from where I'm from. She won two golds, a silver and a bronze. Her golds were in the 200-meter backstroke and the 4x200 freestyle, and she got a silver in the 400-meter medley and a bronze in the 200-meter medley. So shout out to Sonoma County's own Santa Rosa's Maya Dorado, one of the, I think the only Olympian from my area, at least the only one to medal. So congrats to her. Congrats also to Katie Ledecky, who is her teammate at Stanford, if I'm not mistaken. She won four gold medals and one silver, and she looked absolutely unreal in her events. She won golds in the 200-meter freestyle, 800-meter freestyle, 400-meter freestyle, and the 4x200-meter freestyle, which Maya Dorado was inserted in place of Missy Franklin for that one. And they won gold together on that. And then she won a silver in the 4x100-meter freestyle. And she just looked unbeatable in every single event she raced in. That was incredible to watch. So that swimming is one of my favorite events to watch, and I really enjoyed watching all those athletes. I also enjoyed watching the gymnastics. Simone Biles was absolutely insane. She won four golds, one bronze. She won golds in the vault, the team all-around, floor exercise, and individual all-around, and then won a bronze in the beam. And Allie Raceman, she won silver in the floor exercise, in which Biles won, and also in the individual all-around. So that was pretty cool to see two USA gymnasts go 1-2 in multiple events. And another event that I was looking forward to, that I thought I was going to watch a lot more of, but in reality I haven't even really watched at all, except briefly, maybe once or twice, if that, was track. I was really looking forward to track, and I just have not had the time to watch any of the events, really. But I've been keeping myself updated, just looking at the medal counts and seeing what USA sprinters are doing. And so far, I just wanted to say that I thought it was really cool when Breonna Rollins, Nia Ali, and Christy Caslin swept in the 100-meter hurdles. They placed in that order, with Rollins winning gold, Ali winning silver, and Caslin winning bronze. And that was the first ever time that USA sprinters that were women did that. It's been done, I think I read it, it's been done 61 times by male U.S. sprinters, but never for women. So congrats to them for making history. That was incredible to see. Also, congrats to Matthew Centrovitz for winning gold in the 1500-meter track meet for men. And that was the first time a U.S. male sprinter has won that event since Mel Shepard in 1908. So congrats to him for winning gold. Also, it's incredible to see what Usain Bolt has done. Again, there was concerns whether he'd be able to run in these Olympics with his hamstring issues, but it doesn't seem to have slowed him down at all. He's won 3 golds so far in this Olympics. The 4x100 meter, the 200 meter, and the 100 meter. And it's the third time he's won each of those events. So he has 9 gold medals. He has 9 races for his career and 9 gold medals. 3 in each of those events. And that raises the question of who's the better Olympian, Usain Bolt or Michael Phelps? Usain Bolt, he's won 9 gold medals. He's won a gold medal in every single race he's raced in the Olympics. Michael Phelps, he's won 23 out of the 29. So obviously 23 is the higher number for golds. But then again, swimmers have more meets. They have more chances to win medals. So you can't really compare in that sense. I don't know. It's hard to pick because you can't really compare the two sports. Swimmers, they swim in different lengths. They swim different formations. You know, whereas sprinters, Usain Bolt, that's all he does. He sprints. He doesn't do hurdles. He doesn't do long jump. Although, I would be curious to see if he could do the long jump. So, sprinters are really limited in that regard. But, I mean, Michael Phelps, his ratio isn't as good as Usain Bolt. I mean, his gold medal to race ratio is 100%, 1-to-1. Whereas Phelps isn't quite there. But I mean, it's hard to argue 23 golds to 9 golds. So in that regard, I will give it to Michael Phelps, although each of the two Olympians are incredible to watch. They're really entertaining and they're some of the best athletes ever in the history of the Olympics. And who knows when we'll get a chance to see another athlete, another swimmer like Michael Phelps or another sprinter like Usain Bolt. We may never. Who knows? I say just appreciate the greatness while we can, because who knows how much longer they'll be doing it. Michael Phelps will probably be retiring after these Olympics. I would not be surprised. Usain Bolt, I have no idea. Next Olympics, he's only going to be 4 years older, and you only get slower as you get older. So I'm appreciating it while I still can. They're both incredible athletes. Regardless, I enjoy watching both of them. That's all the time I have for this edition of the Justin Rogers Sports Podcast. I apologize again for not being active within the last few weeks. It's just been crazy. And when I have had times, I've had writer's block in terms of thinking of what to talk about, and I don't know. I prefer talking in a setting where I have another person. So like doing my sports radio show, I prefer doing that because I have a co-host and it's more conversation based. It makes it more laid back, makes it more interesting, in my opinion. So I don't know. I just didn't have the motivation for a while, and I apologize for that. But I hope you really enjoyed this podcast. I don't know when I'm going to be able to podcast again, but I will be uploading my radio shows onto the my Audioboom account for those of you who want to listen to that. I'll keep you all updated on when my radio show will be. I'm still not sure. The semester hasn't started yet. I still have to talk to the professor since I'm not currently enrolled. But be on the lookout. I'll still record some podcasts throughout the school year. It just won't be as frequently as it was this summer. Thanks again, and I hope you have a good rest of your night, a good week, and a good start to your school year. Thank you.